This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Scott Frost, co-owner of the Titan Brands Hospitality Group. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Titan Brands is donating some of its proceeds this month to the Alternative Peer Group to help local teens with addiction issues. Scott, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Heather. Appreciate you having me on.
So for those who don't know, what is the Titan Brands Hospitality Group?
We're a local Las Vegas restaurant operator. We have three stores, including the Hussong's brand, Hussong's Mexican Cantina. We're at Boca Park and at Mandalay Place. And then we also have Slice of Vegas Pizza Kitchen and Bar, which is also at Mandalay Place.
Nice. Okay. So what made you decide to support Mental Health Awareness Month?
Well, this is something that you've seen a plenty of headlines about, especially after the pandemic, how people, especially teens, have been struggling with anxiety disorders and depression. And that leads to also struggling with substance abuse. And I am a member of a group that sponsors the alternative peer group known as There Is No Hero in Heroin. And we deal with this on a daily basis, and we see kids that are struggling, and we wanted to do something to help.
Okay. What exactly are you donating from the three restaurants?
So we have a drink of the month, and then we have all of our desserts, and 15% from those sales will be donated to the Alternative Peer Group of Las Vegas.
Okay, cool. And what exactly does that group do to help teens and kids who are struggling?
Well, one of the big things is you need to know you're not alone. And so the first thing you can do is you can drop in and you're with a group of your peers that are struggling with the same things you're struggling with. So you don't have to feel like ashamed to talk about it, or they don't understand where you're coming from. So that's the biggest thing. And then we do programming with that group to give them alternative activities opposed to some of the things that might trigger them, like just playing video games or using substances or anything else that might worsen their condition. This is a place where you can go, which is safe and relatable and just overall very, very positive for not only them, but their parents as well.
Wow, that's great. What has your personal journey with mental health been like?
I have struggled with it in the past. I've had almost lost my life in a motorcycle accident and was paralyzed from the shoulders down, and struggled with mental health after that, and have made it through the other side and doing very well. And I also have a child that struggled with major depressive disorder. And so I've seen firsthand the desperation that goes with mental health, and it's something that we need to confront. It's a problem that's not going away. And if anything, it's getting worse, and we all need to put an oar in the water and help our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. That accident sounds horrible. How did you, I know you said you overcame the mental health aspects of it, but the physical aspects of it still remain. So what's the correlation between the two? You get in a physical accident, it affects mental health, and vice versa, just so people can get a better understanding of how it all works together.
Well, the first thing you need when you have a catastrophic accident is you have to have great support. And that means raising your hand and saying, I need help. And that was, something that was instrumental in my recovery, was saying, I need help. I'm going to need a lot of help. And not only on the physical side, but you're really mourning the loss of your physical body when you're paralyzed from the shoulders down. So you go through a period of mourning, and then you have to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And I have a lot of life left in me. I was 42 when I had my accident. I'm 57 now. And over those 15 years, we've built Titan Brands into what it is today. And with the help of my cohorts and investors and friends and family and just an amazing group of people, we've been able to accomplish the stuff we've been able to accomplish.
What would you say to other people who have suffered from a major accident and kind of have that negative outlook on their future, to help them kind of turn it around and have a positive forward-looking future?
Well, first off, you got to believe in something bigger than yourself. And I'm not here to preach one way or the other, or whatever flavor that is. Realize that there's something more powerful than us at work in the universe, and get plugged into that. Second thing is, understand that you are essentially the same human being that you were prior to your accident. You just have a different ability level, and you have to assess what your ability level is. But for most people, you have your cognitive ability, you have your ability to talk. And now with electronics and technology, you're able to do just about 80% of what you're able to do. Like me personally, you know, what do we spend most of our day doing? It's meeting, talking, selling, persuading, writing emails. Now with Zoom, we can be in any meeting in any country at any time, meeting face to face. So there's just a lot more that you can do than you give yourself credit for after some kind of serious accident.
Yeah, absolutely. So if someone's listening and they know a young person who's struggling with addiction or struggling with mental health issues, where would you recommend they go for help?
Well, first, stop by the website, apglv.org, and you can drop by anytime. There's hours on and programming on there. There's a phone number on the website. And just drop in. Try it out. The big thing, like I said, is you just got to raise your hand. The first step in overcoming any adversity is raising your hand and saying, I need help. So that would be my number one recommendation. Drop in and give us a try.
Okay. And if someone wants to help out in your donation drive during the month of May, they just need to go to either Who Songs or Slice of Vegas, and they can purchase the drink of the month or a dessert, and that's all they have to do?
Yep, that's all you have to do. At Who Songs, it's called Summer Breeze. It's a cucumber mint margarita, and at Slice of Vegas Pizza, it is a jalapeno lime infused margarita. Or if you order any of our wonderful desserts, including our vegan chocolate cake with whipped peanut butter icing, which is one of our most popular, we'll donate 15% of all the proceeds towards the alternative peer group.
Nice. And if a listener doesn't have a chance to come down to one of the restaurants and order one of your specialties from the menu and they would just like to donate money, is there an opportunity to do that as well?
Absolutely. You can go online there and write a check or use a PayPal account, and we can take donations.
Okay, awesome. So apglv.org is the website that stands for Alternative Peer Group Las Vegas, apglv.org. You can make a donation there, or you can find out more about the Alternative Peer Group, and there's no hero and heroine. And if you would like to partake in the treats that are going on for Mental Health Awareness Month, all you have to do is go down to Who Songs at Boca Park or Mandalay Place, or Slice of Vegas at Mandalay Place, and you can buy the drink of the month, or you can buy one of the desserts, and 15% of those proceeds are going to support the Alternative Peer Group, which helps out local kids and teens who are dealing with addiction issues. That's amazing what you guys are doing, and your attitude, Scott, is just so infectious and really inspiring. So I hope you raise a lot during this Mental Health Awareness Month drive, and I hope the listeners go down there and experience what you've got going on with Who Songs and Slice of Vegas. So I really appreciate your time and sharing with us. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Heather. Appreciate it.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes, but I'm not a criminal.
I work for youth advocate programs, I was Tamani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, and get a job.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration and neighborhood violence. Youth advocate programs. Learn how at yapinc.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Tammy Hantz-Lair, CEO and State Director for Communities and Schools of Nevada. Tammy has a longstanding career in leadership, events, and philanthropy, and has been a Nevada resident for over 35 years. The annual Communities in Schools graduation campaign is currently underway, making sure Nevada students have the resources they need to graduate. Tammy, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, Heather, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me back.
So I know we've had Communities in Schools on the show quite a bit, but for those who aren't familiar, what exactly does CIS do?
Well, Communities in Schools is the largest evidence-based, we say dropout prevention organization, but quite frankly, Heather, I like to say we're a stay-in-school organization. We go on a school campus to remove whatever barrier it is that keeps our kiddos from coming to school. And you'll find us in elementary, you'll find us in middle schools, and you'll find us in high school. And those barriers can be, you know, emergent food, they can be hygiene kits, mental health. We do a lot of one-to-one case management with our students. We improve behavior, we improve coursework, we help our kids get to school more often. We work on social emotional needs. Literally, whatever our kids need, we do whatever it takes to keep them in school.
How many schools in Nevada are you currently in?
We are in 92 schools in 4 school districts. So we're in Washoe County, we're in Elko County, we're in Humboldt County, and of course, we're here in beautiful Clark County, and we have 65 schools here in Clark County. So of the 92, 65 are here in Las Vegas.
Wow, that's great. So how does Nevada's education system compare to others across the country?
Well, I mean, Heather, we've all seen the headlines. We know what's happening, right? You know, Nevada, just by nature of everything that we've been built on, has, you know, not invested in education necessarily in the way in which we should have. So that means that sometimes we're on, you know, some of the lower lists of our education place. But when you put a communities and schools on campus, we really try to focus on the whole student. And that's what makes our program so successful.
Okay. And how do you decide which schools get a communities and schools program on site?
That's a great question. I mean, quite frankly, you could make an argument that we should be in every single school.
Yeah.
But they can't be in every single school yet, although you will often hear me say, we really work with our school districts closely and partner with them on the schools that they think that could use us the most. Currently, those are Title I schools. And that means here in Nevada, that means that 60% or more of the students who attend the school qualify for free and reduced lunch, which is an indicator that they live at or below the federal poverty line. We also are maybe some high need schools, maybe some schools that, you know, they've got some different things going on in their campus where they need some additional help. Maybe they have a high chronic absenteeism rate, or they've got, you know, some other things happening where they might want a communities and schools on a campus. Because Heather, you know this, we've talked about this before, putting a communities and schools on a campus really helps our educators. It helps our teachers. So our teachers don't have to worry about if a student isn't coming to school, you know, on a consistent basis, or if a student's coming to school hungry, or maybe if they, you know, don't have their backpack that day because something happened and they weren't able to get it, you know, from their parents' home or from certain situations. And that's the reason why you'd put us on a campus, is so that we can eliminate those barriers. Teachers don't have to come out of their pocket for school supplies or any of these items. And then it really makes everybody's life a lot easier. So right now we're focusing on Title I schools and high need schools. And eventually my goal is to be in every single school that needs us.
Nice. Okay. So what does that look like if a student arrives on campus and, like you said, they forgot their backpack or they didn't have breakfast, let's say. They have some kind of need that's preventing them from doing well in school that day. Do they just go down to the communities and schools office and say, hey, I need some help? Or how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, that's really how it works. So in all 92 schools, we have a CIS resource room. That is a space. Usually it's a classroom, could be a portable. Sometimes it's maybe a smaller office, and then we've got some different closets around campus. Obviously, it depends on the space at the school. But every single student can show up at that room, no questions asked. It is a safe place for our kiddos to go, and they can, exactly what you just said. Hey, I didn't have breakfast this morning. You know, my parents, you know, we left the house before I could get breakfast. Some of our kiddos actually have to get themselves up and get dressed and walk maybe a mile to school before their parent has gotten off for maybe their work shift. And so sometimes, a lot of times, our kiddos don't have time to grab breakfast, or maybe there's some other things going on. So that is exactly what they do. They show up. And we remove whatever barrier it is, and then we send them back into their classroom, and now they have the tools that they need to be successful. If a teacher sees a student that, you know, needs some help, they can refer them to our classroom. If there's a behavior issue and a student's really angry, instead of like referring them to the principal's office, they can send them to the CIS resource room. They can calm down. We usually have, you know, some soft furniture, a Zen space, if you will, where they can take a deep breath. And then that site coordinator really kind of becomes that one-to-one caring adult, which maybe talks to them about maybe what's going on at home, maybe something that made them really angry. And that's when you'll see it. It starts developing into this really great, trustworthy relationship.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I mean, that's a lot more inspiring than a kid who's acting out for reasons beyond their control, constantly getting sent to the principal's office and getting detention.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, and we work very closely with our administrators, our principals, and we work very, very closely with them. But it is, you know, to your point, a restorative approach to making sure our kiddos are getting what they need. A lot of times our kids might be showing up angry for reasons that have nothing to do about a school or things that are going on at school. But then that, you know, develops into other areas. And that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that, you know, our kids have the ability to have those conversations. And trust me, our teachers are there for them. We know they are. But sometimes when you have a class of, you know, 35 or 40 students, you know, you may not have time to, like, you know, individualize every single one to that level. And that's where the magic happens with our site coordinator.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so what's involved in the graduation campaign that's happening right now?
Well, as I mentioned, we have a program on elementary, middles, and specifically high schools. And when we talk about our high schools, when we specifically talk about our juniors and our seniors, there's sometimes a lot of barriers that get in the way for them to take that next step. For example, you know, anytime you apply to a college, you have to put an application fee in, right? Many of our students don't have access to paying for multiple application fees. That's where Communities and Schools comes in. That's a barrier to success. So we would help pay for that student's application fee. And then that way they can apply for colleges. We help them apply for colleges. We help them apply for their FAFSA. So we work on those things. Same thing with SAT and ACT tests. Of course, you can take it for free once, but if you want to take it more than one time, or if you might need some additional tutoring to help you get your score up or, you know, retake it again, that's where Communities and Schools comes in. Same thing with the cap and gown. Many of our students have worked so hard to get across the finish line. You know, they've taken extra classes. They've had to do some extra work. But sometimes they don't actually attend their high school graduation because they don't have the money to either rent or buy their cap and gown. And that should not be a barrier for letting our students celebrate what is going to be the most important day to in their education careers to graduate from high school. So we want to see them walk across the finish line with all of their peers. So that's where we come in. Again, removing those barriers. And that's why we need the community's help.
Yeah, that's great. How long is the graduation campaign running?
It's running now until graduation, right? So graduation is in a few short weeks. And so right now we're, you know, raising as much money as we can to make sure all of our students have what they need to walk across the finish line. We also just had some of our students that took some college tours. So, you know, that we have to rent a bus and we have to pay for some food and some different things like that. So all of those graduation fees cover that, in addition to that one-on-one tutoring that really makes sure that we get our kids across the finish line.
That's great. How effective has the graduation campaign been in past years?
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, I love all the work we do at Communities and Schools, and I'm so proud of our team, but I couldn't be more prouder. Our graduation rate for Communities and Schools case-managed seniors last year was 94%.
Wow.
94% of our students walked across the finish line. And I want to say this is a remarkable accomplishment because many of the students that started, the whole reason why they come to Communities and Schools is because they're not on track to graduate. A lot of our kiddos, a lot of our case managed kiddos, maybe need to make up one or two or three classes that they maybe didn't do as well in as they wanted, or maybe had to, you know, skip because of a variety of different family reasons or things like that. So most of our students come to us like needing help getting back on track. So this 94% means that we were able to not only get them on track, but then also give them the tools they need to be successful after school, giving them a path to college or trade school, or helping them get a full-time job that's going to really help pay their bills. That's what Communities and Schools is all about, is meeting every one of our students where they are and making sure they have the tools to be successful.
Awesome. So you mentioned needing help from members of the community. How can they help out?
Listen, obviously you can go to our website, cisnevada.org/graduate. And we're talking, you know, it doesn't need to be large dollars. It can be $25 or $30 that helps, you know, help our students like rent a cap and gown, you know, $45 or $50 could maybe help with a college application fee, you know, even $5, right? Five people, five friends, that's the cap and gown rental. So really, whatever it takes to help us get our kiddos across the finish line, we are on track to have our biggest senior class yet across the state. So really, last year, we had about 457 seniors last year. This year will be our biggest class yet, probably over 500 students. And we need every single one of them to have the tools they need to be successful.
Awesome. And where can people find out more about what Communities in Schools of Nevada does in general?
Well, we are on all your favorite social channels. So you can go to CIS Nevada on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, and then our website, which is a brand new website, by the way, is cisnevada.org. And everything's there to help you get started and help you have us help all of our students across the state.
Nice. Okay. So cisnevada.org is the website. cisnevada.org stands for Communities in Schools of Nevada, cisnevada.org. You can also find Communities in Schools of Nevada on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at cisnevada. And if you'd like to donate to the graduation campaign and help out the kids who want to graduate this year, just go to cisnevada.org/graduate. cisnevada.org/graduate. And Tammy, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know all the amazing things that you're doing for the kids in our community and how you're helping them out, and especially with this graduation campaign, because those are some amazing stats that you're achieving. And it sounds like it's only going to get better and keep snowballing in a positive way from here. So I really appreciate your time and everything you're doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. Appreciate you having us back on. Appreciate your support. And congratulations to the class of 2023.
Absolutely. Congratulations, graduates.
When a student lacks basic needs like food, clothing, and learning materials, attending school can be a challenge.
And that can make it impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue by ensuring that students have everything they need to re-engage in learning,
access to technology and school supplies,
and even emotional support.
By bringing communities of support to students, we're achieving equitable learning conditions.
And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
Learn more at communitiesinschools.org.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm speaking with Colleen Burns, a former national and local TV journalist with a psychology degree, a background in childhood education, and the real-life experience of raising six sons. Colleen's going to teach us how to turn Mother's Day into Mother's Year through heartwarming gifts that let mom know we care. Colleen, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here, Heather. Thank you.
So why is it important to show appreciation to our mothers all year instead of just one day?
Well, that's what moms do, right? I mean, moms are showing appreciation for their children all day, every day, for the whole year. It's just nice to be appreciated with little things. And I think, I mean, some of my favorite gifts from my kids have been, you know, things like a notebook so I can write down my recipes for them so that maybe when they get older, they can make that food. Things that are just thoughtful that don't really cost anything.
Okay, so it's the thought that counts, literally.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, you can never go wrong with flowers also. Great for Mother's Day, great for any day of the year, actually. I mean, who doesn't smile when they get flowers? It's just such a great, great thing to get as a gift. And I partnered with Teleflora. They're the world's leading floral delivery service. And their arrangements are always made by hand in a beautiful keepsake container and delivered to your doorstep by a local florist. So that's nice. Instead of getting flowers in a box, not in a vase, that you've got to arrange and, you know, put together yourself, Teleflora does that for you. They have a couple of best-selling bouquets. This Mother's Day in particular, one is called the Lavender Whimsy Bouquet. One is called the Artisanal Pitcher Bouquet. They're both made with pinks and purple flowers with some accents of green. And they're both in these vases that can be reused. The Artisanal Pitcher is adorable. It's ceramic with a little bumblebee stamp on the front of it. And then the purple kind of clear vase with the Lavender Whimsy is also something you can reuse for more flowers because you're getting them all year, apparently. And so it's just, it's nice that even after the flowers are gone, your mom will remember that you were thinking about her.
Yeah. All right. So let's take the physical gifts out of it for a second. What are some things that we can do just, you know, to give mom a break from daily routines or just actions that we can do rather than physical gifts?
Right. Well, you know, one thing is to try to get her outdoors, whether that is, you know, asking her to go on a walk with you, asking her to do a bike ride, something like that. This spring in particular, allergies can sometimes be a problem. And I have a solution. This is something that's new. It's the first and only topical gel that prevents airborne particles from entering your nose. It's called Nasal Guard Airborne Particle Blocker. It's considered an invisible mask. A lot of us are getting, you know, rid of those masks, but they're still feeling a little insecure or uncomfortable. You can apply a small amount of this gel around your nasal passages, and it acts as a barrier. It actually blocks virus-sized particles, allergens like pollen, pollution, pet dander, and dust. Product is safe, it's drug-free, it's non-irritating for the whole family, even pregnant or nursing women. That's from Nasal Guard. And, you know, another thing that you can do for mom is help her to remember those daily appointments and to get all those calls and text messages. My mom, for example, every time I call her, it rings all the way through. And then about 5 minutes later, she calls me back because she lost her phone. So there's a new product. It's the Garmin Venue 2 Plus. It is the best smartwatch yet from Garmin. And you can make and receive calls, use voice activation, and get appointment reminders right from your wrist. So even if you don't have your phone on you, you can get all that information. It's loaded with more than 25 apps that can track your fitness, your stress, even your hydration levels. You don't have to pay subscription fees. And because the battery lasts a week or more, you can easily track your quality of sleep. But another thing, I don't know if you have a mom like this, but some people have moms who say, I don't want anything, I don't need anything. And what do you get when they say that? And I say you can never have too many experiences. So if you have a mom like that, say, okay, we're going to this museum, or we're going to take a class together, or we're just going to go out for lunch. Those things are really tough for mom to say no to.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we can send flowers to mom no matter where she lives, but what are some other ways we can show her that we're thinking of her, even if we're not nearby?
Well, you know, phone calls, obviously text messages, those are really important. Also, just remembering special days for your mom or remembering what she's been up to. I think I fail to do that sometimes. My mom will tell me something and I haven't talked to her for a week. And I maybe even writing reminders what your mom was up to the last time you talked to her to make sure that she knows you're thinking about her and keeping track of how her life is going. And even just checking in on her health mentally too. How are you feeling, mom? How are you really feeling? Those things are important and they go a long way to show that you care about your mom no matter how far away she is.
All right, awesome. So where can people go to learn more about how to make everyday Mother's Day?
Heather, you can go to dailylounge.com for more information on these products and other ideas for Mother's Day.
All right. Awesome. Dailylounge.com is the website, dailylounge.com. You can find out more about how to make everyday Mother's Day, how to treat your mom special, and a lot more stuff on that website. So dailylounge.com. And Colleen, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing your expertise and some tips that people can use to make their mom special. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
My early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But it gave my mom and me more time to plan together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Dr. Larry Fine, a specialist in heart, lung, and blood pressure sciences with the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. May is High Blood Pressure Education Month, and half of all Americans have high blood pressure, also known as hypertension. So there's no better time to learn about the importance of monitoring your blood pressure. Dr. Fine, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather.
So half of all Americans having high blood pressure seems high, and no pun intended on that, but why is it so prevalent?
Well, in many countries like ours, as people get older, their blood pressure tends to go up. Part of that is contributed to by obesity. Part of that is the typical American diet, which has a fair amount of salt in it and not enough vegetables and fruit in it, you know, on average. And part of it can be genetic. Hypertension can run in a family.
Okay. And what's a normal blood pressure?
So normal blood pressure is a blood pressure below 120 over 80.
All right. And how high does it have to get before we start calling it high?
So a blood pressure that's consistently over 130 over 80 is high blood pressure, sometimes called hypertension.
Okay. Now, why is it important to monitor blood pressure at home?
Monitoring blood pressure at home with a home monitor has at least two good purposes. The first is to confirm the diagnosis of high blood pressure, because you want to see that your blood pressure is not only high when you're at the medical office with your healthcare provider, but also that it's high at home. For example, my blood pressure is often 10, 20 points higher when it's taken by my doctor, even though I'm a hypertension specialist, whereas it's much lower at home. So you want to see if your blood pressure is high in the medical office and is it high at home. And then secondly, if you do have high blood pressure and you're trying to do something to bring your blood pressure down, like you've changed your diet or you've lost weight or you're exercising more or you're taking blood pressure medications, then measuring it at home over time gives you a much better estimate of how your blood pressure is really doing. Since it's not whether your blood pressure is high, you know, like I'm doing an interview right now, maybe my blood pressure is higher, but it's really what your average blood pressure is over day to day. So by measuring it at home, you can track your blood pressure and see whether what you're doing is really lowering your blood pressure. And you can bring that information to your healthcare provider so they can work with you to figure out the best program for you to keep your blood pressure low and healthy.
Okay. Now, what would cause something like what you described, where it's higher at the doctor's office than at home? Is that just simply a case of anxiety over the appointment?
Yeah, or just it's an unusual environment for you, right? Yeah, so it's probably, you know, the way you're reacting, your nervous system, the way you're reacting to being in that, you know, new environment. You know, and frankly, sometimes doctors or nurses don't actually take blood pressure well in the office, because at home, what you can do, which is the right way to take your blood pressure, is you can, you know, go to the bathroom, make sure you haven't had any coffee or soda, you know, 30 minutes before you measure your blood pressure. You can be in a comfortable chair. You can rest 5 minutes before you actually take your blood pressure. You can make sure your arm is bare so the blood pressure cuff is against your skin. So there are a lot of things you can do at home to take your blood pressure right. And sometimes, unfortunately, at the medical office, they don't take enough time and they don't actually take it the right way. So your blood pressure is higher.
Okay. Now, I've also noticed that, of course, when we use a home blood pressure monitor, it's going to be typically a blood pressure cuff that goes on either the arm or the wrist, and it's automatically taken with a machine. Whereas at the doctor's office, quite often they're still doing it the old school manual way, where they're listening with a stethoscope for those sounds. Is either or more accurate?
So if both are well done, as the way I described it in a few minutes ago, they're both equally accurate. But it's really a question of how well the blood pressure is taken. You know, do you have the 5 minute rest? Is the patient comfortably sitting with their feet on the ground, their back well supported in a chair? Is the blood pressure cuff near their heart at the heart level? So if they're done well, they're both equally accurate. And one good thing to do when you have a home blood pressure monitor is to bring it with you to your doctor or healthcare provider's office, and so they can see how you're doing it and give you any advice to make sure you're taking it right. And also you can compare the value of your device with the value you get in the office, and hopefully they'll be about the same.
Yeah, great information. Okay, so you did mention that changing diet could help. For example, more fruits and vegetables, less salt. What else should people do if they're concerned about their blood pressure?
So there are a number of things people can do. So you can exercise more. You can lose weight. Even losing, you know, 5 or 10 pounds can be helpful. You can reduce the amount of alcohol you drink. Many of us have stresses in our life, so you can figure out a way of dealing with those stresses, talking to a friend, meditating, some people by praying, other ways that you can reduce the stress in your life.
All right, perfect. So where can listeners go to get more information on the importance of monitoring and controlling their blood pressure and any other questions they might have about hypertension and lifestyle?
So hearttruth.gov, hearttruth.gov is a really good website that we run, has a lot of good information, not only about high blood pressure, but just how to protect your heart and how to, you know, how to do things that really keep your heart healthy.
All right, perfect. Hearttruth.gov is the website, hearttruth.gov. And that takes you to a website by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. So government website with tons of great information, hearttruth.gov. And Dr. Fine, I want to thank you so much for being here, sharing your expertise with us and letting us know what we can do to monitor our blood pressure better and deal with it if we do happen to have hypertension. So I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
I'm Joe Don Rooney from Rascal Flatts, and I absolutely love being a part of this band. It's an honor and really a lot of fun. Sometimes, though, you can feel the pressure to perform night after night. It can get stressful. Thankfully, I know my bandmates will look out for me, and I'll look out for them. When you see a friend feeling the effects of stress, let them know you're there for them. Sometimes that's all they need. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Air Force.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Dr. Clinton Wright, Associate Director for the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, or NINDS. Strokes are a leading cause of death in the U.S., and someone dies from one every 3.5 minutes. May is National Stroke Awareness Month, so it's the perfect time to learn more about the risks and symptoms of strokes. The NINDS, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, developed the Know Stroke, Know the Signs, Act in Time campaign to help us do that. Dr. Wright, thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So what exactly is a stroke?
Well, there's two large types of stroke. The more common one is where a artery in the brain gets blocked by either a piece of plaque or a clot, and it damages that area of the brain and leads to disability or it can lead to swelling and potentially even death. The other type, which happens in about 20% of strokes, is when a blood vessel breaks and you bleed into the brain, and the blood expands and damages the area of brain around it, leading to the same types of problems.
Okay, so why is it so common and so prevalent in the U.S.?
That's a great question. I mean, I think the main reason is that there are really controllable risk factors that are very powerful risk factors for stroke, including things like high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, high cholesterol. And all of those things are powerful risk factors for stroke. But the good news is that they can be brought under control if people know their risk factors and are going to the doctor and getting them brought under control.
Okay. And what are some of those risk factors?
Well, one of the most common, probably the most powerful risk factor is high blood pressure or hypertension. And that's very common in the United States. And it's particularly common among African-Americans and Hispanics in the United States. And part of the problem is that people don't really realize that they have hypertension, so they don't really know to go to the doctor and get it brought under control. Another one would be diabetes, which is also a big risk factor, and smoking.
Okay. So why is it that Black and Hispanic people are more prone to hypertension and therefore more prone to strokes?
Well, to a large extent, we think it has to do with access to care, because we know that lower socioeconomic status is a strong risk factor for stroke. We also know that people that live in rural areas are at higher risk of stroke than people that live in more urban areas where there's more access to medical care. But we think a lot of it has to do with access to care and having health insurance. But another aspect of it is just being aware of the risk factors and sort of education about the risk factors and getting them under control.
Okay, so we know what some of the risk factors are, but what actually causes a stroke to occur?
Well, there are many different causes. You can have damage to the heart, which leads to a clot forming in the heart and then getting pumped up into the brain. You can also have damage in the arteries that lead to the brain, leading to atherosclerotic plaque, for example, where a piece of the plaque eventually breaks off and goes up and causes a stroke. Or you can have chronic damage to the blood vessels that leads to weakening of the blood vessel wall, and then the wall can rupture and bleed into the brain. So those are the main causes.
Wow. Okay. So what are the signs and symptoms of a stroke when it's occurring?
Yeah, so that's really important to know. And that's why we developed the campaign, Know Stroke, Know the Signs, and Act in Time, because there's two really big pieces to that. One is understanding and recognizing the symptoms. So, for example, having numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden confusion or trouble speaking or understanding speech, sudden trouble seeing in one or both eyes, sudden trouble walking, or dizziness, or loss of balance or coordination, or sudden severe headache that doesn't have an understandable cause like migraine. All of those symptoms are really important to understand so that you can call 911 right away and get the care that you can get as quickly as possible to potentially remove the stroke and cure yourself. So very important to call right away.
Okay. And what is the time frame that we're working with in order to fulfill that goal of acting in time?
Yeah. So the way we think about it is time lost is brain lost. So the more quickly you can get in, the better. 3 hours is our most important cutoff. If you can get into the hospital within 3 hours or within 4.5 hours in some cases, you can get a blood clot busting medication that can sometimes open up the blood vessel if it's due to one of those blockages that I told you about. We also have up to 24 hours to go in with a catheter and remove a clot when it's a large vessel that's blocked in the brain, depending on what the imaging shows. So really, we want to get people within 3 or 4.5 hours. If we can get them in that time, that's much better. If we can get them in within 24 hours, that's much better than coming in after that. So we want people to understand if they get the symptoms, call 911 immediately. Don't wait to see if the symptoms get better or get worse. You know, just call 911 and let the professional deal with it.
Okay, great advice. Now, you mentioned that some of the risk factors are things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking. So in theory, we should be able to lessen our chances of getting a stroke by getting those things under control. What are some things that you suggest to make ourselves more healthy and less at risk of having a stroke?
Well, one is to get regular medical care and really know your numbers. So if you have hypertension, know what your blood pressure numbers, you know, are. Take control of your risk factors. Measure your blood pressure at home. Write it down. Take it to the doctor and say, hey, you know, is this okay? Do I need more medication? The same thing is true if you have diabetes, looking at your blood sugar numbers or your cholesterol. The other thing is basic stuff like eating a healthy diet and, you know, plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables, exercising regularly, you know, about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week would be great. And then if you smoke, take steps to quit. There are medications that can help people smoke that you only have to take for a couple of months and then, you know, get yourself off of that terrible habit of smoking, which is so bad for our hearts and our brains.
Okay, perfect. So where can listeners go to learn more about strokes and what to do if they see one and how to prevent one?
Well, we have a website called www.stroke.nih.gov, and we have a lot of information there about the risk factors and treatment timelines and so on. So please check out that website.
Okay, perfect. So once again, the website is stroke.nih.gov, stroke.nih.gov, and you can find a lot more information there. And Dr. Wright, I want to thank you so much for being here and bringing this to our awareness and giving us some great tips and fantastic information that's so important. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Dr. Sumeel Oza, electrophysiologist and chief of cardiology at Ascension St. Vincent's Medical Center, and Kathy Foster, AFib patient and president of the Broach School in Jacksonville. May is Women's Health Month, and millions of women in the U.S. suffer from atrial fibrillation, or AFib, the most common heart rhythm disorder. Dr. Oza and Kathy, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather.
So, Dr. Oza, what exactly is atrial fibrillation?
So atrial fibrillation, as you said, is the most common heart arrhythmia disorder in human beings. About 6 million people in the United States have it. Essentially, what happens is that the heart starts to race and beat irregularly, giving people symptoms of things like a fish flopping around in their chest is how it's been described, to shortness of breath, to things as kind of vague as just fatigue. It increases the risk of stroke. It increases the risk of heart failure and can really affect the lives of people that have atrial fibrillation.
Why are women often misdiagnosed?
Well, their symptoms are often atypical, meaning they don't have the usual symptoms of a rapid heartbeat or a fish flopping around in their chest. Sometimes they just have some fatigue, and they also tend to ignore symptoms. They tend to kind of think that it's anxiety or something else and come to us later in the course of their disease, often making it harder to treat.
Kathy, what symptoms did you start experiencing that caused you to seek medical attention?
Well, I went to lunch one day, and upon leaving, my heart started fluttering around and really racing. And I thought, oh, I may have just had too much tea to drink at lunch. And my Apple Watch actually gave me a high heart notification. So prompted me that the AFib stopped after a little bit, but prompted me to call my cardiologist. I already had a cardiologist, and went to him, and he diagnosed me with having AFib.
How has that diagnosis impacted your day-to-day life?
Well, for me, the AFib was intermittent, and sometimes I would go from just a regular heart resting rate of 60, 70 beats a minute to 150, 160 beats, and it would literally just stop me in my tracks, make it very difficult to do my job. I didn't know there was not a specific trigger that I could attribute to the AFib beginning, so it made it difficult to just function every day.
Yeah, I guess so. Dr. Oza, what are the treatment options that are available for AFib?
Well, we generally start with medications. Often medications can at least limit the symptoms of atrial fibrillation. However, when that doesn't work, we move on to other techniques such as catheter ablation. Catheter ablation is a minimally invasive technique where we use tiny little tubes that we insert through a vein in the leg, thread it up to the heart, and we can either cauterize or freeze tissue in the heart that's responsible for the atrial fibrillation. Patients usually go home the same day after the surgery, and they often almost immediately, like Kathy did, have respite from the symptoms of atrial fibrillation.
So, Kathy, what was your experience like going through the treatment to keep your AFib under control?
So initially, I started on the medication, like I said, and over time, the medication just wasn't working. My symptoms were getting worse, so I was referred to Dr. Oza, my electrophysiologist, and we tried some other more potent medications, still didn't work. So we talked about the cardiac ablation, which at first, when I'd heard about that, I was very concerned. Anything with your heart is very scary sounding to do a procedure, but upon talking to Dr. Oza, it was made to be, it's minimally invasive. You go home the same day. It's a fairly routine thing for them to do, obviously, but it could change. The outcome for me could be life-changing. And it was. I had immediate relief from it.
Wow, that's awesome. So Dr. Oza, we know what some of the treatment options are, but is there any way that we can prevent getting AFib, or is it one of those things that it just happens and we have no control?
Absolutely. It's very preventable. AFib is generally a disease of lifestyle. So people that have AFib also have diabetes, they have high blood pressure, they have coronary artery disease. And treating these diseases helps prevent atrial fibrillation. So prevention of high blood pressure, controlling your high blood pressure, controlling your cholesterol, but also living a healthy lifestyle, exercising regularly, eating properly, maintaining a steady weight. I think all those things really can help prevent atrial fibrillation. There's societies that have very low rates of atrial fibrillation around the world because they don't have the same diseases that we do in the Western world.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of diseases are caused by those things, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, it's they're all interlinked. The whole cardiovascular system is really one large organ, and it disease in one part of it really leads to disease in others.
Okay, good to know. Kathy, what advice would you give to other women, either who have AFib or want to prevent AFib? What would you want them to know?
I would say, don't be afraid. Talk to your doctor. Go to your doctor if you have strange symptoms and you're not sure. Don't just ignore them. I also spoke to other friends. I found out I knew people who had had the ablation procedure, and they confirmed for me that it was not a scary thing to go through, and it was really life changing for them as well. So I would recommend, you know, seek out all your options. Obviously, talk to your doctor, and together you can decide what is the best thing for you.
Okay, great. Dr. Rosa, where can people go if they want to get more information or advice about AFib?
Obviously, first start with your doctor, but there are online resources. GetSmartAboutAFib.com/radio is an excellent website that gives you treatment options as well as can help you find providers in your area that can provide therapy for atrial fibrillation.
Okay, nice. So GetSmartAboutAFib.com/radio is the website. GetSmartAboutAFib, that's AFIB.com/radio. GetSmartAboutAFib.com/radio. And Dr. Rosa and Kathy, I want to thank you both so much for being here, and Kathy for sharing your experience, Dr. Oza for sharing some strategies and some information that is very valuable to the listeners. So I really appreciate you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Charlie did not die from an overdose. Charlie was poisoned.
Websites and social media selling fake medicines may look legitimate, but they're not.
He died in less than 15 minutes after taking the pill.
Any medication not purchased from a licensed pharmacy could be deadly.
No other family should go through this. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy, learn about fake medicine on social media, and if an online pharmacy is safe.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, or VA, is encouraging veterans to take care of their mental health through the Today I Am campaign. Find out more or access resources and support at maketheconnection.net. That's maketheconnection.net. And veterans in crisis should call 988 and press 1 for the Vet Crisis Line, or send a text to 838-255. That's 988 and press 1, or send a text to 838-255. Also for Mental Health Awareness Month, the Titan Brands Hospitality Group is donating 15% of all Drink of the Month and dessert proceeds to the Alternative Peer Group to help local teens with addiction issues. That's at both Hussong's locations and a Slice of Vegas. At Hussong's, you can order the Summer Breeze, and at Slice of Vegas, the Jalapeno Lime Margarita, or any dessert. Find out more about the Alternative Peer Group or make a donation at apglv.org. That's apglv.org. The Just One Project's third annual premier On Cloud Wine fundraising event takes place on Saturday, May 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at a private residence with valet parking available to guests. The Just One Project is Southern Nevada's largest mobile food pantry and distributes groceries to more than 20,000 food insecure residents every month. This year's event honors supporter Jerry Stanley, president and founder of SoilTech. Get your tickets at thejustoneproject.org/oncloudwine. That's thejustoneproject.org/oncloudwine. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, May 22nd at 8 p.m. benefiting the Foundation for Recovery, and Monday, June 5th at 8 p.m. benefiting the National Association of Women in Construction. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's MondaysDark.com. AARP is holding its first Benefits Badass contest. You could win $50,000 for submitting a 2-minute video telling how you make use of your AARP benefits. Upload your video by May 29th at AARPBenefitsBadass.org. That's AARPBenefitsBadass.org. Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors through May 31st. For every dollar you donate, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to Southern Nevada children and families in need. Find out more or make a donation at threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org. Communities in Schools of Nevada is holding its annual graduation campaign through mid-June to support graduating high school seniors. Donations of any amount will help ensure Nevada students have the resources they need to graduate successfully. You can donate or find out more at cisnevada.org/graduate. That's cisnevada.org/graduate. And Chef Pete Gioni's running his Cooking for a Cure fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100,000 over 10 weeks to support the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. You can donate at the various partner restaurants or directly through his website through June 10th. Find out more, learn about healthy eating for cancer patients, see the list of participating restaurants, or make a donation at cookingforacure.com. That's cookingforacure.com.